Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 or 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, that is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries, and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they get their hands on to incarcerate. And that's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said, this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is When God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box going to get sent back to sender. And now you're going to have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
The humiliation of being in Sydney with insufficient funds. This is where I grew up, you know, and without a secure roof over my head.
It was so overwhelming that it was too much to think about. So basically, I laid on the floor for 3 days.
It could be your mum, your grandmother, and in fact, in 30, 40 years, it could be you. Homelessness can be sleeping on the streets, but also it can mean not having a secure roof over your head, maybe having to move from couch to couch. You just can't plan ahead because you don't know where you're going to be from one day to the next. And that creates anxiety. It was very unsettling for me. My name is Kay Dolman. I had been a stay-at-home mum and, you know, involved in school activities, volunteering and doing a little bit of work, and little bits of cleaning, little bits of ironing, which I hate. Well, 2007 was the year of my divorce after 36 years of marriage. I found myself waking up from a bubble of feeling secure to a situation where I didn't have a secure roof over my head. And I knew that I couldn't continue living with family and friends. And it was such a deep pit of despair that I found myself in that situation. I had put myself in that situation. My friends, they had their home, their retirement, you know, their super. I was ashamed. Yeah, it was a situation that I didn't think that I would ever be in. The idea of house sitting came to me, and that became a reality, and at least I had a bed to sleep in at night. My family and friends knew the situation. Yeah, it was, yeah, touched on a sore spot. What I found was hard was not having a home to have them stay, you know, as we used to.
Many, unfortunately, don't actually see themselves as homeless. They see themselves as having a bit of a problem, and they're going to try and, you know, get through it. It's a growing issue, and it's a growing issue for a few reasons. We've got women entering older age now who haven't necessarily had a long time in the workforce with superannuation. Many have also spent a lot of time out of the workforce raising children, caring for other family members, and find themselves in older age living in poverty. When you're trying to rent privately, if you haven't had the opportunity to purchase your own home during your life, you're at much greater risk of a housing crisis. And the research found that the largest growing group of women in this situation are conventional women who haven't necessarily had a housing crisis before, but who have found themselves having a housing crisis or homelessness later in life.
It's not something that I also consciously thought you could actually be a homeless person, because without safe, tenable, secure housing, that's actually what I am, and that comes as a real shock. I had never ever contemplated that this is somewhere that I would be in my lifetime. So I'm Penny, I'm 56 years old, and currently I live in shared accommodation.
Just going to have a cuppa.
Would you like that?
Perfect, love a cup of tea.
Yeah,
it's a day for it, isn't it? It's cold outside.
I call myself fortunate in that I was able to rent a room here. However, that situation itself is very precarious. The person who offered me this space is in the same position that I am. So if the landlord sells, if the rent goes up, it's back to the situation of trying to find somewhere else to live. I had acquired a disability. I didn't enter the workforce at a younger age. Gender pay inequity meant that I had limited access to superannuation. Lower wages impacted on where I am now, combined with a relationship breakup later in life. All my bills came at once. My car, which I drive with hand controls, broke down and needed to be fixed. My rent was due. I could see no solution. I could see no glimmer of hope, and I could see literally no optimism. And that really is not who I am as a person. The more I thought about it, the deeper I dwelled into that pit of darkness. And for me, I was thinking, well, there's no option, so just don't be here. What needs to happen, I think, is a whole range of things, but for myself, public housing would be great. That is at a rent that I can afford. There's no point in finding somewhere to rent when all your income goes in rent.
I think the federal government needs to take a really close look at the policy levers and ensure that they are putting in place policies that create affordable, secure housing. It's just not happening at the moment. There isn't a plan.
We have a really, really strong emphasis on homelessness and ensuring that the money is provided to the states, and the government certainly does that through the National Partnership Agreement on Homelessness, to see that we are addressing, in particular, one of the issues faced by those women. At the other end of the spectrum, it's encouraging as many women as we can back into the workforce so they are in receipt of the wage, and ensuring that young women know that they need to start putting money away towards their retirement incomes so that they don't become one of those statistics.
If I could go back to my younger self, what would I tell myself about this? I would say at the age of 18, I would have valued someone coming to college where I was then and giving a presentation or a speech about financial advice.
Now, oh my golly, what I would do differently is to make goals. Make goals and to have different goals and along the way.
I speak to a lot of the children of my clients, so in their 20s when they first started working, or maybe when they're a bit older and they're looking to enter into a long-term relationship. And the key things I say to them is, make sure you know where your money is. People hate the word budget as much as I hate the word diet. And that's the reality is that it's very similar to having a sensible eating plan and regular exercise. There is no magic bullet for losing weight. And there is no silver bullet for setting your finances in order. It is hard work and it's regular and you start with baby steps. It is important that we're having discussions around gender equality when it comes to pay. Recognition that superannuation balances, there is a discrepancy there between men and women who've worked for the same amount of time. Having these discussions and actually working with some real facts is really important in terms of furthering the debate around policy decisions.
Well, certainly there are not enough women in Parliament, and the Prime Minister commissioned myself along with Senator Linda Reynolds to put together a report to provide to our Federal Council to look at strategies that the Liberal Party can put in place to increase female representation.
Being in affordable housing, having an affordable rent meant that I could save money and I could be part of the population in a normal way, in a respectful way. As soon as I was given this unit, it was like I was, my home became my haven. And it's a place where I could just be me.
I think given that we're talking about women who have in fact raised the next generation, who have given back to their communities, volunteered in their communities, I think we actually need to do a bit better by them.
I was informed that I would probably be over 65 before I would receive any form of public housing, and that was breathtakingly shocking. Basically, I don't live my life with despair or despondency, but I basically live it from day to day or week to week.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out. He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank a three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
People keep talking about how the world is going to come to an end. And I wonder, in these days and these times, is anybody safe? Is anybody? People keep talking about how society is falling down today. And as hard as I try not to listen just to what them folks got to say, but you know, I just can't help but look around and see we digging our own grave. And there's just one thing I want to know. Can anybody be safe? Can anybody be safe? Anybody be safe? Can anybody gonna be safe? Why don't you save me, Lord? Save me, Lord.
Everybody gonna be saved.
everybody's gonna be saved.
Today, we're going to go to the phone lines, but a jump-off topic is what we started off, well, ended with last Friday, and that's Booth Settlement Wealth. We had Reba Brown on last Friday, and she had her aunt, one of her aunts on with her, 88 years old, her aunt's 88, that is, and they shared with us, the Booth, that's B-O-O-S-E, Booth Settlement. Now, let me give you a legal definition of a settlement. A town, a city, a village, all of those are settlements. But they have, you know, different legal descriptions that will make it a town, a certain class town, a certain class city, or whatever. But they're all fundamentally settlements. So, the Booth Settlement is 300 acres, and it's in Mississippi. And we're going to be right back. I believe Reed was called in, so we're going to be right back with that in about 3 or 4 minutes.
Thank you.
Today, our jump-off topic is, and we're continuing from last Friday, Booth settlement wealth, and some of the things we want to cover are, that's the end of that, family wealth, measuring wealth, family businesses, and a family school, all right? And I think after you listen to, because I measure wealth differently than probably most people, and I measure it differently from Forbes magazine. But as you'll see, it's a very accurate way to measure wealth. Let's see. Okay, so Reba, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. So can you is that background noise? Is that background noise too much?
No. You're good.
You can hear me.
First question out of the box for people that missed last Friday. Share with us exactly what is the Booth settlement?
So our family settled in Hickory, Mississippi, and we began to build schools, churches. We have a cemetery. We still have our settlement. And we have 300 acres about in Hickory, Mississippi. We do also have family ties in Meridian, Mississippi, according to one of my cousins. So Susan Booth is a teacher. She's out of New Jersey. She is going to be calling in if she's not already on the queue to speak. So she and I are just basically taking notes from my cousin, like you said, Ann Booth Buffington, who was on last Friday to share with us about our family legacy. One interesting thing that I wanted to share as part of, I believe, how we were able to sustain the family's legacy with the Booth settlement is that some may call it unfair, but the fathers did not leave any land to the women in the family. They had to marry someone of their choice. However, of course, if they wanted to obtain wealth, they had to marry someone who had wealth established, or at least something to bring to the table. So I guess they came to the table with the dowry. But the women were not left anything in order to continue the booth name with the legacy of our family actually being getting settled and continuing to attain wealth and retain our properties and so forth.
Okay. All right. So 300 acres now. There are towns in this country, municipal towns at that, that don't even have, that are not even 300 acres big. I've run into some towns that have, they might have less than 40 acres of land, but they're actually legally a town. But that's a whole nother podcast in itself, but 300 acres. So what I want to do is, like I said, I want to introduce people to I Measure Wealth. Now, Forbes magazine, they measure wealth by net worth. They measure by net worth, and a lot of people, bankers and financial people and loan officers, they look at net worth and stuff like that. I measure wealth by two primary sources. One is social capital, and which we're not going to get into that today, but just to give you a clue, the Booth Settlement is a family project, all right, that's been around for, I guess, over 100 years, or been intact for over 100 years. But we're not going to get into the social capital aspect of it, not entirely today. We might give a hint of it. But the primary way that, or one of the primary ways that I measure wealth is natural resources. So that's what we're going to, I'm going to give you the way I think today on this as we just take a peek at it. Now, there are 300 acres, so let's just subtract everything down to, so you can follow me clearly, 1 acre of land. 1 acre of land equals 42,560 square feet. That's a lot of feet. Once again, 1 acre, when the acre is about the size of a football field, an American football field, not a soccer field, but an American football field, 1 acre is 42,560 square feet. Now, this is in, Hickory, Mississippi. I haven't been to Hickory, Mississippi. But let's say you're looking at an acre of land in the country because, more than likely this settlement's in a rural area. And you got trees on it. I'm not saying a Booth settlement because I don't know what it looks like. But I'm going by typical rural lands I've seen. So on that 1 acre of land, you've got, just with the naked eye, you see ground, you see trees, if it's, got some trees on it, maybe wooded, maybe lightly wooded or heavily wooded, but some trees. And it's daylight, so you can see the trees, you can see the grass that's there, if there's some tree branches that have fallen to the ground or leaves that have fallen to the ground like in the fall of the year, you see all, it's there. Now, let's say we don't see any people, but we see the vegetation that's there and whatnot, and it's daylight. All right. Now, my way of measuring wealth, once again, is by natural primary ways. It's not the only way, but primary ways of measuring wealth is by natural resources. So, number one, let's take a look at the natural resources within sight, which most people take for granted, and it's invisible to most people because they don't look at they don't measure they measure things in the way of dollars, balance sheets, you know, different ways of, that's their way of measuring wealth, you know. So since I can see this 1 acre of land, or I can't see it at night because at night, at this particular 1 acre of land, it's pitch black. There's some place that you can go at night where there's no lighting, and you can hold your hand in front of your face. You can't even see your hand. So it's daylight. So the first natural resource that is visible in plain sight, but most people discount it, don't even consider it, is daylight, sunlight. There's 42,560 square feet of light on this 1 acre of land. Now, what does that mean? If it's daylight and you have solar panels on your property, those solar panels take that daylight and they convert it into electricity, where if you have a TV set or anything that needs to be, or most things that need to be electrified, that's what's shining on that property. That's just one of your natural resources, and it's worth money. You can convert natural resources into money now. You can convert it into anything you want to trade into. So that's just one natural resource. Number two natural resource. All right, I see grass on the property. I see bushes on the property. I see trees on the property. That's the second natural resource, because it can grow food. So with 1 acre, we've got the second natural resource of vegetation, and there's at least 42,560 square feet of it right there. The third natural resource that is there, and there are telltale signs of it, although you can't see it on the surface, but it's there because you can see the vegetation of the trees and the bushes and the grasses that are growing there, and you might see some flowers or whatever. And you might even see some animals going through there, deer, you know, whatever is out in that rural area. That tells me if I see vegetation, there's groundwater. There's 42,560 square feet of groundwater. All right. Now, those are just three natural resources I've come off the top of my head. There's at least seven other natural resources that is on that property. So a little natural resource as well. Now, once again, you've got 42,560 square feet of dirt there. All right. Now, something that people pay for every day, not all everybody, but a lot of people, particularly in Western countries, people buy water. You know, it could be Dasani, Deer Park, Evian, Perrier, Fiji water, whatever, the store brand water, whatever. But water. And depending on where you buy it, at the airport, the train station, the bus station, depending on how it's packaged, water, in many cases, is priced higher than gasoline. They don't tell you that, but, you know, depending, like, if you buy, like, I was in D.C. once at Union Station. That's the train station in Washington, D.C. And I bought, you know, like, $3.50 for, like, a liter of water. That's expensive, at least to me it is. So, anyway, so you're looking at, like I say, you're looking at this acre of land, and below the surface, there's 42,560 square feet of water. Now, let's look at, and you can follow along with me on this. Let's find out how many gallons of water are in an acre. So let's just type how many gallons of water in 1 acre. Okay. So what we have here is there's 326,000 gallons of water in an acre. All right. So now let's go back to the Boos family here. So let's go with 300 and what did we say here? Yeah, 326,000 gallons of water. All right. And if we multiply that by 300, because they've got the Boos settlements on 300 acres. So we multiply 326,000 gallons. That's just for 1 acre. Times 300. The Boos family, just within the Boos settlement, below as groundwater, has 97,800,000 gallons of groundwater, bare minimum. Now, when it rains, if they harness the water, if they harness the rainwater, and that's the next natural resource. It doesn't rain every day. I don't think it does in Hickory, Mississippi. I doubt if it does. But when it does rain, you've got that much water falling on the ground. Now, of course, if you can harness it, that would be a fourth natural resource. So I figure with most, even out in the desert, because out in the desert, you know, if you see some bushes out in the desert, you might not see any trees out there, no evergreen trees, whatever. But if you see vegetation out in the desert, maybe not the Gobi Desert, but I've got some land in Texas where it's basically mountain and desert. But it's got bushes out there. It has vegetation out there. So there's groundwater out there. There's groundwater out there. So the Boos family wealth, like I say, just on water alone, water and sunlight, there's plenty of, there's a considerable amount of wealth that's there. But like I say, now anybody, if you can get a hold of an acre or a quarter of an acre or whatever, like I say, start measuring, and you don't forget about striking oil or nothing like that. It's the two things I look at is, and most people never look at it, is groundwater. Now, another natural resource would be, since there's vegetation there, because let's say they cut the grass or the grass dies or branches fall off of trees, leaves fall off of trees, and it gets on the ground, before the floor of the acre is what I call, and everything I'm talking about, I call it earth wealth. Earth wealth. Those dead branches, those dead leaves can be converted into new rich topsoil, or if you gather it up, harvest it up, and put it into a compressor and make pellets out of it, you can make fuel pellets that heat your home, cook your meals, or do whatever you want, you know, with fuel that you can, biofuels. And that dead leaves, dead grass, tree branches that have fallen off the trees that are dead, all that is earth wealth. So the Boos settlement is just abundant with earth wealth. Now, this earth wealth is available to anybody that can recognize it. So you can go buy your own 1 acre, 40 acres, 300, whatever you want to do. You can even buy a quarter of an acre or a tenth of an acre. You've got earth wealth that you know, that's there. So play around with it. There's at least 10 natural resources. Now, I just named 4 or 5, and I haven't been there, but I know, you know, a lot of the basics of what I said is right there. So you might want to look at that for you people out there that might have some land already. Your earth, your wealth, you're probably wealthy, not probably, you're definitely wealthier than you probably think you are. Start measuring things by, and matter of fact, everything I just named can harness inflation. You don't have to worry about anybody stealing it for the most part, because most people particularly the way we have been conditioned in our westernized world, and that's globally, even in developing countries, we look at, you know, government-issued legal tender, the United States dollar, the euro, the pound, the peso, you know, whatever, the government. That's how we're measuring it. Like I said, Forbes magazine measures things basically in dollars based on net worth. I measure things on natural resources and social capital. Social capital is people. Because in order to tap into all these natural resources, you're going to need people. As a matter of fact, if you know how to trade correctly, you can cut out the middleman, which is government-issued legal tender. But once again, that's another, that's a whole other podcast on all of its own. So, Reba, with that said, and you know what, on this, they might be sitting on the Booth settlement might be sitting on a billion dollars worth of wealth. Anyway, Reba, any comments, thoughts?
Well, I do have a cousin who is a gardener. He has visited the Booth settlement, and she said she was able to see the church. The cemetery still there, and that's the thing. Even both sides of my family, the Alexanders and the Boozes, have always had a garden in their home, in the yard. So my son,
Reba, I'm gonna call that the next natural resource, but man's got to cultivate that. That whole 300 acres is nature's grocery store.
Yes.
You just have to, now you can plant your food, or you can, some people forage food. So I'm sure, particularly originally when they bought the 300 acres, you know, there was already food. I mean, squirrel, now I'll give an example. Think about how much it would cost to feed all the squirrels on that property, all the wildlife on that property, squirrels, birds. It would be staggering into the thousands of dollars on a daily basis to feed the wildlife on that.
Teach them. Teach them. Senor. I'm backing out. I apologize. These young guys, I'm going to bring some flyers up here, and we'll talk about this. I do apologize, but I don't want to hit those young
people. Okay, no problem. Safety first. But, she grows to continue about her being a farmer or a gardener.
So, yeah, I'm trying to remember where she is farming. She's got like a whole, she has a whole business. And her fruits and vegetables look so unreal. They're so beautiful. Colors. So, I'm going to, Susan actually, I think I had her number at one point, but if Susan's on, she can probably connect her to the call. So I'm excited because
Susan's on the line because we got a number of people on the call today. Press 1, Susan. I don't know what your phone number is, so press 1. This could be Susan here. And 347,
hello?
Your mic is open.
Yes, it's me. I am, just give me a second. Hold on, I had to leave because there's some kids testing. Hold on. Okay. Yes, I'm in death requirement. First of all, I think the cousin that you're talking about, Reba, is Bridget, and she has a garden in Tennessee. Can you hear me?
Okay, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay. And then the thing is, because I have seen that some of the properties being sold on that same different like various real estate sites. So instead of having other people buy it, I prefer for us as family members to at least obtain that property to buy it if necessary.
Because like, did you say that there were some because I remember you had looked something up before, and I podcast. And was it like listed for sale, or
yeah, it was listed for sale. the Melissa for film. It was, if I could recall, it might have been about 10 different properties. I might be exaggerating, but it's been a minute. But it's been out there, and it's been out there for a minute. And I think, you know, that, one of us family members, you know, can buy the property or whatever it is, you know, take it over rather than for somebody else to do it and to benefit from all of what you're saying. Because when you mentioned about the vegetation and things, I mean, that's a perfect, thing to, you know, have, you know, whatever fruits and vegetables or whatever that can be produced on the land. You know, I don't think anybody else should be able to get their hands on it, and it should stay within the family so that way we can have some type of legacy going on.
Right, which is how the Booth legacy has to keep itself by keeping the properties in the family.
Right, yeah. And that would be nice if we could do that. So, but I wish if I could recall the website, I don't know if it was Zillow, but there was a few out there. I think they were going anywhere from $150,000 between that and maybe $250,000. But I'm not really sure. I can't remember now. And this has been since the pandemic. I'm sorry, can you repeat that again?
Well, we should have an opportunity, even if we were to pool all funds together, to retain some of those properties.
Right.
But the opportunity, I don't believe, was given. So we are in touch through Facebook.
Not at all, like, yeah.
We're able to see a few of our pages, right? The Booth Family Reunion.
Yeah, there's at least, like, I would say at least 3-4 pages up there of different boozes.
Right.
Now, repeat now, what's the sale? What's at stake?
There are a few properties for sale for like $150,000, $200,000.
Yeah, about that much, yeah.
Now, this is within the 300 acres. Outside the 300 acres.
I'm sorry, say that again.
No, is this within the 300, the original 300 acres?
You know what, I am not really sure, but I could say that because I know there's a Bruce Road, and that's where the homes were in that area, right on the settlement.
Now, Larry, you brought up something interesting. Explain to us Boo's Homes. What's that about? Or what were they about?
Wait, I'm sorry, repeat that again.
What the Boo's Homes? What was that?
Well, you know how I mean. If I'm looking in my mind, I remember that aerial view. You had the settlement, and then you had a Boo's Road that almost went like in a semicircle or something. And then there were properties all on those roads, and they were all owned by Boozes.
Oh, okay.
And so those homes are being sold.
I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that they were being sold. Now, I imagine those homes were built by family members, too, originally, weren't they?
Right, yeah.
All right. Out of the 300, because I know you already said you don't know the whole backstory on it, but out of the 300 acres, what's left untouched and not in jeopardy?
That I'm not really sure because I didn't get the whole gist of everything. But what
all
I
right.
can do after this call, I can do the research and find it out for you.
All right. It'd be sure nice to keep that intact because, like I say, the it's an incredible amount of wealth sitting on those 300 acres.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just the natural resources.
Mm-hmm.
So So it'd be good to keep that intact.
Right.
And the asking price on those houses were what did you say?
I say between, but I can recall it between $100,000, between $100,000 and $250,000. You know, give us like
right.
a
now,
few, this, you know.
Now is that coming? Now, does each one of those houses sitting on like an acre of land or what? To your knowledge.
I can't recall that. I don't want to give you a figure that's
okay.
where you are because I'm not really sure. But like I said, after
right.
today's call, I will do the research.
All right. All right. Well, the family's got something to start with, so it's very
mm-hmm.
significant. And
okay.
I like the use of the family reunions, you know, to keep track of that stuff. So.
Right. That's how it's
now, do they have
family
reunions every year down in Hickory, Mississippi?
I don't know, but I know they did have one, it was like the right year before the pandemic, and then they said that it circulates to different cities. But I was told
yes.
that even locally that they do have them. I don't know if it's every year or every so often or whatever. At that particular location, I don't know.
Well, Susan, Ann shared with us Friday that we're going to be in Michigan this year. She's
mm-hmm.
She's dealing with some physical obstacles, so she walks there physically, and I'm hoping that we could get together with, you know, some educators and the family
mm-hmm.
that we can do speak live. We can live stream. Our
mm-hmm.
family members engaged that won't be able to be there physically.
Right.
A lot of, yeah.
All right.
From and
for either one of you, this question is for either one of you. At the last family reunion that either one of you attended for the Boots family reunion, that's a rough guesstimate about how many people showed up, adults that showed up, not the children, but adults.
Well, honestly, I haven't gone to any Boots family reunions as of recently, so I can't give you that information. I don't know.
Okay. Reba?
Years, honestly. So I recall at that time about 200 adults, and now some people didn't come to the dinner that I attended,
mm-hmm.
But we certainly had a crowd of people, and we gave away scholarships for the kindergartens on up to the college graduates, and we have a family crest. We have a charter in almost every state in the nation. We have leaders of those charters who are getting to the concern that we and Susan, you are in New Jersey or New York?
I'm in New York.
New York, okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well,
so
based
now,
on that figure,
with
let's
the
say
charter in New York should be coming out to the
Could you repeat that again, Reed? I'm sorry.
No, I'm saying with the internet, we should be able to reach people, at least somebody. I'm going to see if I can get my former student. So I'm going to see if I can get him on because she was well connected. So I'm going to just reach out to her again.
Okay.
So I found out that I met her at the graduation. My senior graduated Spanish at Little Black Pearl.
Okay.
Reba, based on that figure that you gave, about 200 adults at the last friend reunion that you're familiar with.
Yeah,
200 adults. Now, let's say 200. That's 200 households, let's say. And if we multiply that by a yearly household income of just $10,000 a year, which more than likely they've got more than that, that's $2 million. That's $2 million.
Yeah.
You guys can get together now. If you can't pool that in cash, you can organize and probably get some type of line of credit or something from the bank that you can turn that those 200 family members into a line of credit of $2 million.
Okay.
So that's that, and I call that a family resource, a family natural resource that can also be tapped as well.
Yeah.
And, of course, when you do these Zoom calls and everything, that's the time to educate people on, because if you don't educate people on and tell them the benefit of, you know, like say, a person, $10,000 is not it's below the poverty level. However, 200 times 10,000 equals 2 million. And then when you tap that into, you know what, you can take 1 acre of land and multiply it into millions based on the natural resources that are on the land already. And that's just what is just sitting naked, bare, with rabbits running through there. That's it. So you guys got a lot of power there, quite a bit of power. I don't know the family. I'm just saying some of it might be tapped because she just named the Boost Homes. So the moment you put a structure on it, if you put a shed on it, the way the local governments look at it, anything that has a permanent foundation, they're going to tax it. So thus the price, you know, asking price of $100,000, whatever they want. So like I say, I don't know what's there now, but possibly you guys might be sitting on $1 billion.
Okay.
But I've named about $400 or $500 million, and I've only got up to maybe 4 or 5 natural resources.
Wow.
That's why we have these podcasts. And then, like I say, I want people to start. A lot of people measure wealth by, all right, so-and-so's got a car, cars depreciate, or, you know, they look at somebody's paycheck, which is going to be spent. But if you measure with natural resources, you know, you're not going to steal those unless you sign it away legally or something like that. And like I say, basically, we use money to in some way buy natural resources to make, to build houses, to drink water, to cook food, to buy food. Like say, if you're growing food, I mean, like say, a forest is really nature's grocery store. But most of us in modern society, we have lost the ability to even learn how to recognize the natural grocery store that nature's provided. Now, the rabbits and the turtles and the raccoons and the deers and God knows the infinite amount of animals that live on an acre of land, they know. I mean, have you ever seen a skinny raccoon or a skinny pigeon?
No.
<won't. laughs> You know, so essentially, I mean, nature's getting, I mean, and they're programmed that way. So we can get that way, too. That's a skill that we can pick up and learn.
Okay.
But congratulations for the Boost family, for whatever you got there. I'm glad that Zach Boost or whoever up the family tree, they bought it and it's managed to stay in the family, I guess, well over 100 years now. But it's still in the family, so that's a good thing. And you're on the air talking about it, so now we have the electronics through podcast, Zoom, and YouTube, and Facebook groups, and Instagram. So it'll be like you both agreed on it, and I agree with you, that, all right, for those who can't make it, you know, you can educate and inform, you know, right on online now. So that's the good part about it and whatnot. So, any other information you guys would like to share about the Boost settlement? Because when Reba mentioned that Friday, then she brought your aunt on. I mean, you guys have more than a gold mine. That's
wow.
That's congratulations. There are a number of towns in the United States that they don't even have 50 acres of land, but it's a town, but an economy and everything. And there's an economy within the Blue Settlement, because I don't know if there's a store on that place, but, you know, there can be a store there, like a general store for people that live not only on the 300 acres, but the surrounding people that live outside of that 300 acres in Hickory, Mississippi,
right,
or connecting satellite towns, that the Boost the family can have a store there. They can. It's only limited to your imagination of what you can do.
Wow, okay. Well, I like that idea.
Reba, you still there? Because she got quiet, which she might. Was somewhere.
But I like the idea. But I'm gonna, do some more research. I don't know when we're gonna talk again, and that way I could, come back with some more information and things like that. But from a little bit I do know, it's a lot of land, and like I said, that the homes that are still there. I'm curious to see if they had actually sold anything, since I last looked.
Okay. If you have to sell it, and I'm just speaking generally, it should be. Matter of fact, I don't know if there's any family bylaws on there,
right,
because the family could form a corporation or whatever. And that family members, if land is sold, or houses are sold, that blood relatives should get first crack at it. That's an idea.
Thank you. That's exactly what I was along the lines of what I was thinking about. Because if it stays in the family, then, obviously when you have ties to a place like that, you're going to more or less care more about the land and whatever structures and things that are on there, as opposed to somebody just walking up the street and saying, oh, I'm going to buy some land, because then eventually what a lot of people do, and then maybe some organizations, they'll buy one property one year, the next time they'll buy another, and next they all wind up owning the whole thing.
And I would
like to prevent that if possible.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, I told Reba last Friday that you guys can come on here every week. As many times you want, once a month, every week, whatever. And then, on your own, you can do and she knows how to do the Zoom calls and all that other stuff. And basically, it's going to come down to basically educating people. It's not difficult. It's just educating people on your options so you can keep it all within the family. Because with 300 acres... I'll put it this way. I'll use my family. On my mother's side of the family, there's 88 acres in Louisiana, in a rural area.
Nice.
And if the family members could ever get together, we'd be set. If we can ever get together on those 88. But what I started to do, I just started buying land on my own. But you, you guys are more organized. I mean, you got a Facebook page, and my family's not on that level, on my mother's side.
Oh, okay.
Your number of your family members. It's just like the Native Americans are doing now. Not all Native Americans, but quite a few Native American tribes who own casinos. I had one on here some years ago, where not all members of the tribe work in the tribal business. Now, the tribal business could be accommodations, it could be a golf course, it could be a gambling casino, but the tribal business employs members of the tribe, but then everybody within the tribe, including the people who do not work within the tribe, they get a check every month, and that check's big enough for people within the tribe to buy a house, a car, and that type of thing. So with the 300 acres that you have there, there's enough wealth just on the land. Okay, if you develop, start. You got the ideas are already there. You don't need any ideas from me. That there's enough there within the family. There's enough family wealth where you don't have to go looking for a job for outside people.
Right. Okay.
And then Reba just posted something on Zillow, I believe. And if anybody's got any questions, wants to contribute, you know, press 1 if you're already in the queue, or 619-768-2945 will punch you into that. Because like I say, there's enough family members where you can have a trade school there where you can teach people how to build, let's just say sheds. And you can build sheds for people in that county or the surrounding counties. And, you know, all that money's going to blood relatives. Let's see. Reba sent something here. Reba, you there? I don't see. Oh, hold it. Let me open up the mic. Hold on, Reba. 309 area code, Jamaica's open.
Good morning, L.A.
Good morning, Chris. Good to hear your voice.
The show. Definitely. I just heard something about, you know, you can build sheds in your community. I got a phone call Friday from an HOA that has changed their variances to where everyone had to have a shed in their backyard. So they asked me to build 88 6-foot by 8-foot sheds, 8-foot tall. So it was kind of like the little tiny house that, you know, that was trying to talk about, doing 100 of them, get started on an 8-foot by 12-foot tiny house.
How you doing today?
This just stepped in with 6-foot by 8-foot storage sheds in their backyard. So, yes, those projects can get started because I'm going to be getting started
Chris,
on this week.
Now, Chris, you're a builder and you're an educator. Now, because I'm looking at the Booth settlement here as an example, because there are other families out there with, you know, acres of land that whatever they might be doing with. What could you do to actually teach family members on how to build, because you know how to build, teaching them how to build sheds or build, tiny houses, dog houses, or any size house they want. Share with us how you can possibly help them to develop an educational program where they can start building and have that as a family business.
Exactly. The one thing about it is, you know, it comes down to what you teach, that social equity. You know, just by having the family members together, you know, you get 4 or 5 of you, and that weekend, you guys ate good, you had a barbecue and everything else, but you did something for one of you that's either an Airbnb maybe, you know, that's going to bring in an income, or a transitional housing unit to help somebody, or a shed, or even you know, maybe dog houses. You never know what you might need, okay? So it's what the need of the social person needs. But if you went and did that for a month, say you had 4 people, each of you went and did something for each other on a weekend. So in that month, you all have something that can bring in income, or it was able to solve a problem that you had. Now, it didn't cost you guys anything but your time, and you already, you know, are friends, and you're supposed to, you know, do things for each other. But the difference is you didn't have to say, hey, what are you going to do for me? They already knew that you were going to come help them, because this is the way we have to look at things. Everybody won't do nothing for nothing. It just seems to be that way anymore. They're like, what am I getting out of it? Well, if everybody was off the street and on their feet, what would you get out of it?
30,000.
Uh-oh. I like 30,000 numbers. but, you know, I don't know. The way to teach each other is I have a simple way of building something. And I've taught a blind man how to do it. People that's never touched this material in their life wound up building the greenest built home in America. They built it with no dumpster. You know, doing things that you don't know only does educate you, but also something that you might be able to go show. I ask a mathematician a question. So you want to ask, you want to see about me educating people. Here's how I want to do it. I'm asking 250 million Americans from 8 years old to 88 years old in the next 8 months to pick one of these seven things to work on. And it's going to be for one common goal, to get our people off the street and on their feet with no hunger. Now, if 8 billion people on the planet get this message, then people are really doing what they need to do, and that's share the message. Because there's a solution everywhere. We can get it done everywhere. But 8 hours over the next 8 months, from 8 years old to 88 years old, you all have a purpose. You have a reason. If you've got property and you want income coming in on it, we need to talk. If you have property and you want to get rid of it, people have houses that are empty, we need to talk. Because you could have guaranteed income coming in, and if you continue to own the home, or we'll be willing to rent it from you. And you're going to get your money guaranteed, but you're also stepping into where you're going to be putting money back into the community, because there's going to be more money made than just your rent. You got to start by doing something. But social equity, you know, teaching each other what we know is how you grow. And I've got machinery that makes 2 feet of material a second. It gets put together by a half-inch screw. So if anybody knows how to run a screw gun, if you don't know how to run a screw gun, more than likely you don't. You might be able to pull the trigger and do it, but I can show you that if you're running this gun the way it's supposed to be ran, it'll be a whole lot simpler on you, and you won't wobble off the end of it because you're not running the screw and the gun equally. I've seen a lot of people do a lot of things. But when you have a magnetic end that puts a half-inch screw on it that drills a hole through 2 pieces of metal and cinches them together, that's a simple thing to do. People can most definitely realize the difference that you can make. But when you cover up a house and build it out of wood, you don't sit out there and use the saw and did everything, I'm going to give you every component that don't have to be cut. All you have to do is put it together. It's just a jigsaw puzzle. But the difference is, you know, have you ever done a puzzle? And if you have, you know, you just have to look at the pieces and realize, okay, we know that this is the outer rim. Pretty simple. So even if you didn't have a blueprint, you could sit and look and lay that thing out and know how to do it. But the way to do it is I give you that on paper. You can see it all. But once you see it with your eyes and do it with your hands, you won't need to look at that paper again. And people don't like looking at instructions, so I'd rather just give you a few pictures. I don't need to instruct you to do anything. I just need to let you see how it has to be done. And you lay it out like that, you're going to be like, wow. I put 5 screws here. Okay. 5 there. Okay. 4 in this one. Okay. Because your little blueprint will tell you exactly what to do. 1 here, that's what it'll tell you. But when you're able to do something that'll last 1,000 years, but you just gave your kids something positive to do, and turned around and gave you an income, and gave them an income that could last them their lifetime. Children cost money from birth. So, before, really, because it costs in you to even be born. But once a baby's born, they cost money. Well, they should be able to be set up to never have to worry about eating, whether they have a place to sleep, because they was not brought into this world by their choice. They were brought in by yours. So now we have to give them a choice and give ourselves one on whether or not we want to continue doing what we're doing now and think about me and not we. And that's the problem. But, you know, just sharing time with LA on here, he's shown me so much more about the social equity part of it on so many different aspects. Even from a lady that will take an order for making clothes or doing something and that, making you a hat or like that. And she'll do it live and sell products right there doing it. And she's doing great. Her husband will be over there doing it. You know, there's different ways. You don't have to build a house. You don't have to build a greenhouse. But the one thing I would say is if you could share a message and get people to come out that will build a house and build a greenhouse, then you did your part, because there's no part too small. We need them all. So just sharing a message is not too small, because right now that's the hugest thing you can be doing, is educating everybody you know that if we need 8 hours volunteered, will you commit? And if you don't commit, guess what? I'm not going to point out, hey, you didn't commit, but you're going to know you didn't. But when you start seeing the difference of the people that did, maybe that'll change your mind and you'll come out and you will commit. And a lot of people have to see it to start doing it. But I could sit here and speak all day and you can take in this information at 40 megabytes per second, but your subconscious is bringing in 200,000 megabytes. But I want to visually show it to you so that you process those 40 megabytes 200,000 times faster. And that's what DIY Housing TV is about to be that vision that you all need to see. And
yeah, Chris,
I'll hang up my mic for a minute.
Chris, I'm going to play something for everybody. The regulars have heard this before, but I want to, as you listen to it this time, it's Nine Friends. But if the Booth family can organize just nine people, here's the beginning, the mustard seed of what the Booth family can do with that 300 acres.
I say some shit to y'all that I seen yesterday that made me smile, but it hurt me to my heart. There's a house next door to me that's been abandoned, and the yard, the grass high as hell and everything. There's a couple of abandoned cars out there beside the house. Well, yesterday I get off work about 7 o'clock. A Mexican guy pulled up. He said, "These your cars?" I said, "No." He said, "I just bought this house, man." I said, "All right, that's what's up." He was like, "You know whose cars these is?" He said, "No." He said, "Well, I bought the house, not the cars." Okay, I'm like, cool. I'm thinking he's just coming to look at the house. I go back in the house, do a little straighten up. I swear to God, I walk back at the house. Now, I'm getting off about 7:20. It's fucking 9 Mexican trucks just pull up. They got fucking beer, lights, and shit, right? So I'm like, what y'all finna do? He said, "We finna fix this house." I said, "What kind of crew you got working after 7 o'clock? He said, "These my friends." The fucking house is fixed this morning. They went in there and drywalled that fucking house. Wow. I just left out of there. It was a fucking abandoned house. That bitch looked new this morning. Woo. It was an abandoned fucking house, and it looked new this morning. It's an old African proverb: many hands make light work. I just don't think they're better than us. I just think we won't do nothing together.
Wow.
Mm. You're not hearing what the fuck I'm saying. It was an abandoned house yesterday at 7:15. That bitch is new this morning. He bought a tax lien house. I can't wait to see what they do. I can't wait to see, is one family going to live in there? Is they going to, I'm going to get to know the motherfucker. You best believe me, when I make some money, I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring us together. And I'm not fucking with a lot of people.
Now that's what, that was done with, all right, 9 trucks, so I figured it was at least 218 people. But everything starts with one. So the Booth settlement, they've already got 300 acres. They've got more. Now, don't try, you know what, just get 2 people to agree on what they're going to do on less than 1 acre of land. And as Chris said something very important just a few moments ago, if you show them what to do as far as a Booth-run family business, and Reba just sent me a picture of an aerial view of Booth. I mean, this family has a street. They got their own road.
Yeah.
I can easily see the $1 million to $3 million a month. That's what's sitting up on there. And I'm being very conservative with that number. But just the 2 Booth members that we have on the phone right now, that's all you need to have a Zoom call with, you know, and if you might only get one other family member to cooperate, you know, to start up.
Wow.
Because we know how it can be with family, and people have their own lives, you know, and whatnot.
Right, right.
And, you know, the call might be a disruption to some people. But that's okay. But once they, and I'm glad Chris brought that up, there's a young lady that I watch on YouTube, and she's 28 years old now, just had her 3rd child. But she's a seamstress. She makes children's clothes. And she started off in a bedroom, then went to a farmer's market, then they rented out a house. They outgrew the house. The business outgrew the house. I've been keeping track of them for about 2-3 years now. And now they over, her and her husband, they do over $1 million a year. She just basically, you can see her making the clothes. So it's, and you don't have to do real estate. You don't have to do but clothes. I mean, there's one lady I talk about on here. She does cupcakes. She started with $5. So the bigger advantage is that the Booth family, you got the land already. And it's quite a bit of it. You got quite a bit of natural resources on it already. And you got the social capital, you got the blood relatives. But like I say, it might start with just 2 or 3 people, but that's more than enough to continue on. Because it actually has already started. When they bought that 300 acres, that was the start. So now we're just talking about whatever you need to do to keep it going forward.
Wow.
Just thinking out loud. Reba, you still there? Reba's somewhere in the background. Anybody else got any comments? Press 1 if you're in the studio already. Because there are other families that can do the same thing. Your family might be sitting on a considerable amount of land. You can share with us what you're doing or what you could do, or if you want to comment on what you've heard. Like I said, the title today is Booth Settlement Wealth, and Reba was, you know, she's had 2 relatives on now, so that have given us a wealth of information. And you've got, apparently, you got branches of the family in different locations as well. So.
You talking about the last name branch?
No, I'm saying you have branches of the family in different locations.
Okay.
They organize the reunions. They reach out. Now, Chicago, it's interesting how Ann is my connect in Chicago. So I was able to get information about one of the family reunions. 1 year, they've had the whole family tree. So she's encouraging us to do the family tree again to, like, merge the tree, just to update it, you know, which makes sense. So I said that'd be a project that we take on, the younger people.
Well, that sounds like a full-time job right there. You're going to have a couple of family members that all they do is make sure that family members are kept abreast of developments the whole year. That's the job.
Yeah.
Then you have other family members that act as a travel agency, you know, to arrange for family members to get to particular family members. They can book flights, book, you know, whatever it involves in travel. That's another business that can pop up because you got the bodies already. The thing is, now what has happened, and I guess this is happens globally. We're taught, the average person is taught to go to school and get a job and work for somebody else outside of our family and make somebody else's family rich. That's all backwards. What we need to do is educate our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren so they will work for the family business.
That makes sense.
Anyway, but yeah, Reba sent me an arrow view, so it's, like I said, you guys could possibly be sitting on $1 billion worth of wealth.
I like the trade program.
What I'm wondering about,
Where
is your property located? Where's the business property located? Oh, not, is that in Alabama? Is that what I heard?
Hickory, Mississippi.
Hickory, Mississippi. Okay. And
who was the other person on
here's
that? I don't know who that is.
Chris, identify yourself because she doesn't know your name.
This is Chris Collins. I'm with an organization called HOPE, Housing Our People Everywhere. And I like to give people a double dose of it. Humans on planet Earth, housing our people everywhere. And I make framing material. And what I would like to do is, how many family members right now on your 300 acres could use a building? Because I'll give you a building for half price right now. That either you can turn into an Airbnb, you can use it as a shed, you can use it as a he shed, she shed, you can do anything you want with it. It's more to the point of us filming your family and others that your family knows, not just your family, but your family's friends. And we wind up doing this, and then we'll go pay it forward to all your family, friends, and stuff that come out and do it. Because I'm looking to initiate something here across this nation, and I would like every person from 8 years old to 88 years old to volunteer 8 hours toward this mission. But this would give you guys more equity, give you something more on your property and what you have. If they just want to be able to go out and camp and visit and be on the property, they can do that. It gives you a place to be while you're developing the other, and I'll be willing to supply all the material for that as well. But I'd be willing to offer that out to your family and see if what your needs might need to be met for everybody to have something.
Okay. I'm sorry. I'm going to have to leave the call right now. I'll talk to you guys later. Thank you so much. And the host, I'm sorry, what's your name again, sir?
L.A. Davis.
Okay.
Just call me L.A. That's me. Yeah.
L.A.
Thank you
for
coming.
Thank you. I'll talk to you soon. Reba, I'll talk to you later. Thank you. All right. Bye-bye.
Well, Chris, you just mentioned something. If they set up, now, about a month ago, we had Troy on from Oakland, California. And he makes, let's see, $9,000 a month out of his backyard. He's not on an acre of land. Okay. He makes $9,000 a month out of his, you know, backyard, renting out two tiny houses. So let's just cut that in two. Let's say $4,500. So imagine, because you just mentioned, imagine if they had just one of the buildings that you're talking about that would last, you know, many years. Imagine in 4,500 times, just one building on 1 acre each.
Right.
They'd make $1,350,000 a month just having one house.
That's what just surprised me about what I just offered. I didn't mean to scare her off the phone. I was just.
But you know, I mean, we're not talking about rocket science. We're talking about one house, not a mansion, but one house placed on. One house for each one of those 300 acres.
Yep.
Over $1 million a year revenue. Over $1 million a month.
Right. And here, they if they looked at what they would ultimately have in each one of them, you know, you just say $10,000. They don't have to start out with 300. Let's say they started out with 20. And we used 20 acres, and we had 20 Airbnbs, and here's what they were doing. And those 20 Airbnbs at, you know, say, you know, $4,000 a month or whatever, you know, and times that 20, that's money that they could put into doing the rest of them. But this was a way that I thought they would be interested.
But that 20 will give them $90,000 a month. That'll give them $90,000, and that's liquid. $90,000 a month liquid,
right.
And that you can roll that over to it'll keep on growing every month.
They would have $200,000 in each one of them, or in all of them, in all 20
right.
of them. So they have a $200,000 investment
right.
that brings them in $90,000 a month.
Reba, you still there? I know the light's on.
Yeah, I'm still here. Can you hear me?
Right. So Reba, did you hear how you guys can make over $1 million a month?
Certainly. I was pretty decent with math. Yeah, Susan is a teacher, so she couldn't stay on with us. I thought that I wasn't on the host queue. Can you hear me?
No, your mic was open. Yeah, we can hear you.
Okay, yeah. So, yeah, we are actually trying to connect with those that are in charge of our properties. So we're like one of the newer generations. My cousin Ann, who is 80-something years old, she is actually – to me, like a historian for the family. So when we connect with, you know, actually get to the point where we can have a conversation with those that are in charge of the properties and handling the properties.
Sounds like you guys need a Booth Family Museum.
That's what I was thinking about when I was thinking about my brother.
If you take one of the buildings that Chris was talking about, and making it, now this had to be a larger building, and have various family members donate to the Booth Film Museum, which would be on the grounds of the 300. That will help people connect, and particularly the younger generations, are appreciating and keep this thing going from generation to generation to generation. Because you guys have enough, I'm sure there's enough artifacts within that family tree to have your own museum there.
Well, honestly, like you said, people are busy, right? Knowing what little bit I know, I would say, just speculating, maybe 50% of the family might not, quote-unquote, have time. But to me, it's what you dedicate your time to. We have a lot of professionals on that side of family. I mean, state troopers, career professionals. We have an attorney. You know, my brother is a retired police detective. He's on a second career, but he does own properties in Pennsylvania. So to your point about Airbnb, that pretty much, if no one is in those properties or if there's, well, we know, I know that there's vacant land there too. I would even say for
with the vacant properties, like with the vacant houses, you can convert those into Airbnbs.
Well, I would like to see a structure that would be to support a garden, a farm, a small farm. Yeah, a small garden.
You got all that there.
Well,
you got all that there.
I don't know what they're doing because we didn't even know about the property being for sale. You know, my dad, he purchased his own property like you did with your family. You purchased your own properties. Although my family, my father's side of family, the Booths are pretty organized. My father just elected to do things on his own. And looking at, the legacy of the Booth settlement, that's what Susan and I are pursuing, to connect with those that are the decision makers.
Well, between Friday and this podcast right now, I've spoken to 3 Booths, including you. So, in my opinion, that's all you need. You got 3. You got enough to start.
Yeah, and it'll grow. I am in contact.
All you need to do is, put it out there and then see, like, particularly if you can, because I know within families, there's the head of the family and this, whoever, family politics involved. But if you can some kind of way get a hold of an acre or at least a half acre or even a quarter acre and then start pumping out, like Chris brought up earlier, and showing people, because basically it's going to have to be show and tell. If people can see it, they'll believe it. And if you can teach them this is how they can benefit from it, because that's really the bottom line. People are going to be thinking, well, I'm a Booth. What's in it for me? So if you can show them how it can be something in it for them, then you're going to have more people that will be jumping on the bandwagon. But you got to show them first, though. You know, you got 3 already. So start with the three I know about. Just start with those 3.
Yeah.
Then you got 3 sons. You don't need all 3, just 1 of them. And then your grandchildren, you can basically bring them up in it. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, the little Bob the Builder already.
Right. So, you got all the raw materials there.
And the social capital.
Oh, yeah, you got Well, let's see, you're on Friday. She was your cousin, right? The one who on today, Susan?
She is, yeah.
All right. 1, 2, 3. There you go. You guys have a family Zoom meeting just with you 3 and just go from there.
We've done that, and we've had we have a few more Booths today. So we had about 10 of us on the call. So they're in different parts of the nation. However, we're actually just doing our research. My father transitioned in 2012. I've been fighting for a property that was located in Bronzeville, so I'm still pursuing obtaining that land because a church, get some illegal things done, but, the new pastor over there, he's amazing. The old pastor transitioned. However, the good thing is that I was told that they wanted to do a garden. However, I want to, I have plans for the property as well. So, there may be an opportunity for some type of collaboration. Not that they're owed any collaboration, but politics caused my property to be torn down. Other than that, you know, when you have a little
right.
still there?
Yeah, I mean, we're listening.
Yeah, so Chris is still there, right?
Yeah, he's still here, yeah.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, Chris, Grand Rising, greetings. So when you have information, you can only see, you know, as far as decision-making, it certainly is an idea. However, you know, we're still doing our research, yeah. So technology, we expect
well,
to be moving
here's
forward.
Here's what I can tell you.
Right, and something that I can promote what you're doing because I do know a lot of different families and organizations that have lots, and I would love to see, you know, as we spoke, we had spoken about before on one of our podcasts, to build a community center. And so your structures are not to building some modern building for these churches as well. So a community center would be perfect. So I'd like to run with that.
Boost community center. Like for instance,
no,
on Airbnb has over 50 or 60 categories in which people can make money. I mean, if you want to rent an island, they got a bunch of islands on Airbnb that you can rent. If you want to rent a mansion, they got a bunch of mansions that you can rent. They also have
marketing
people on Airbnb.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but just listen to me. If you take the $300, let's say they're asking $100,000, $150,000 for these houses on the Boost land right now. Okay, and I covered this story about twice within the last month or so. There's a lady in Hawaii. She rents out a tent in her backyard in Hawaii, and she makes $28,000 a year renting out a tent.
I share that with
my son. Right now in Florida, I rent out a driveway, a carport for $400 a month. So those booths, anything that's empty or those houses that are for sale, you can convert those into an Airbnb, and those properties can start making money right now. You can use that money and leverage it to cash out those properties. So there, or, you know, you can, I'm sure somebody in Hickory, Mississippi, or near Hickory, Mississippi, is doing something and making money with Airbnb. So, you know,
same
thing can be done.
So remember, I told Chris, I don't know if you heard or were able to listen on a podcast when I was in, you were on actually when I called in, Pennsylvania. I was staying at one of my brother's vacant because no one was there except me. And he had just gotten some tenants out there. They had moved. So some cosmetic work needed to be done, but by the time I was leaving, my nephew had gotten hired in the city because he was like 2 hours away in the suburbs of Pennsylvania, Pittsburgh area. And so he's going to be renting that. My brother's going to rent it to him at a reasonable rate. And he's got a new position with more money than he's ever made. So his younger brother is interested in knowing more about the Booz family. So he has connected with, started an account with Ancestry.com. Is he living in an Airbnb? I know he's in a luxury apartment. He's a former police officer, detective. And now he's in community organizer. He's working for a not-for-profit that's in charge of, now they're in charge of like the $50 million for violence prevention, violence reduction, as they call it, out there in Pittsburgh. So he is the director for the collaborative. So for me, I thought about And this is before I found out that my nephew, because I was out there for a couple of days. I came out there Thursday, stayed Friday till Sunday. The wedding was Friday. So I mentioned to my brother, I said, wow, this would be a nice Airbnb. So come to find out, my nephew's going to get that place, but then he has properties in different areas too. He has four others. So I certainly will be talking to my brother again. And then I did mention to him that I have 5 acres and you follow Alabama. I said Mississippi. It's Alabama because I'm thinking about Hickory, Mississippi. But one podcast, so if anyone had heard, you follow it's Alabama. And I got that from my godfather, the Northcutt family. So
hey, Reba,
certainly,
I'm on,
I would consider that.
Reba, I'm on Airbnb right now. And I put in Hickory, Mississippi, so near in or here or near Hickory, Mississippi, like in Meridian or Newton, or hold it. They have cabins on Airbnb. They have a few people have tents on Airbnb. Let's see. Let me go to this one. Okay, here's a tent in Quitman, Mississippi. Now, how far is Quitman from, man, this is a brand new listing. Let me see if I can get a super host. Let's see. There's a barn. Let's see. Okay, Superhost has a cabin, and this is in Forest, Mississippi. So, all right, how far is Forest, Mississippi from Hickory? Forest, Mississippi. Forest, Mississippi. Forest, Mississippi is Forest, Mississippi is in Scott County. I'll look it up now. Okay, hold it. Now let's do it another way. Forest, Mississippi. Forest, Mississippi to Hickory, Mississippi. Okay, that's it's a 30-minute drive. So that's not too far, but it seems like, let's see, Hickory, Mississippi. Hickory, Mississippi, which is in Andrew Jackson County. Let's see. I don't want Andrew Jackson. It was named after Andrew Jackson. Excuse me. All right. Hickory is in Newton County, Mississippi. So and apparently Newton is the biggest town in with over 3,000 people. So, all right, let me see. All right, Airbnb, Newton, Mississippi. Let's see, Mississippi. All right, here's what we got. Airbnb, Okay, here's a home in Newton, Mississippi, $147 a night. Here's another home in Newton, Mississippi. Okay, wait a minute. Okay.
I did want to tell Reba here, if she's still on the phone. As far as building your community center in Chicago, all for it. There is a meeting today with Dorothy Brown, the city clerk. It was supposed to be with Brandon Johnson, and he backed out of the meeting this week. Are you there, Reba?
Her light's still on. She's somewhere near.
Oh, okay.
Yes, I'm still here. I just needed my noise out.
Okay. Your city has asked for a solution for the hunger and the homeless problem. And it was from Senator Jackson and from Brandon Johnson, the new mayor. And
now, what happened with the
I was asked to come up to a meeting on at 9 a.m. in the morning and give them a solution to what's going on in Chicago. And it was set up during a luncheon about a little over a month ago, and he contacted and said he had a convention that he has to go to. So he's going to give the surrogate man, Dorothy Brown, this meeting. And that upset me because I had people coming from across the country that's built a million homes in the past 10 years. They've done 600,000 foundations this year alone. And I'm sitting here bringing a solution to their city, and I basically get smacked in the face a week prior to everybody showing up. Not even a week. So I'm doing a meeting with them today, this afternoon. It's going to be brief, but I've already put the request in. I want an answer on a date that's set in stone and will not move. And I'm moving forward on that. But just know your new mayor canceled a meeting that was set by him and Senator Jackson.
Well, Reba, thanks, Chris, for that feedback and comment. Reba, your thoughts for today?
Well, I appreciate all of the comments and suggestions and the encouragement, not only to continue on with our research to pursue sustaining the Boo settlement. I expected a couple of my sons, at least, I have three, are listening in, and we'll have something to share on Monday. But we're going to set out to do our research. My 25-year-old, who's a new father, he commented when I texted him the link and so forth, the same links that I've shared with you, Brother L.A., that he said that was interesting. So he certainly is interested. All three of them are interested in the booze settlement in the history of our family. However, we are doing some research, and so that's what they're going to be part of. But I'm going to have them to help share as we go along.
All right. In their research, matter of fact, tomorrow, if you don't mind, we're going to continue in on this Booth settlement. I'm looking at the potential of it. tomorrow's podcast is tentatively called 300 Tents because, like I said, the lady in Hawaii that does $28,000 a year off of a tent in her backyard. So imagine if, like I said, we place one tent on 1 acre, that's $8.4 million a year. That's all.
Well, I will say, and you follow, I actually do have that land. So I don't, I can't say, and I do know that the family has been inclusive with previous, you know, investment opportunities or whatever is going on. That's what we're learning. We're learning about what's been going on. So, but you follow, I'm going to have my god sister to get on with me. I'm going to pursue reaching her today. Well, this is all day because we couldn't. I need my sleep on. We communicate.
Yeah, well,
ask
tomorrow. And like I said, this can apply to the booths or anybody listening. 300 tents. You can't get any simpler than that. 300 tents that'll bring you over $8 million. Well, now if you're able to, well, let's say you don't crank out $28,000 per tent. Let's say you crank out. I'm gonna say. All right. 300 tents and not 3,000, 300. And let's say you crank out, I'm going to say $200 a month. All right, you can crank out, yeah, matter of fact, let's say 300 tents and you crank out just $100 a month, which is $1,200 a year, times 1,200. That's $360,000 in a year, $30,000 a month. So I would recommend get on Airbnb, which that app is free, and then just put in tents or anything. I would say tents, and put in tents in different locations and see what people are getting. Anyway, play around with it as part of your research. But anyway, there's thanks for having people on Friday and have another family member on today. Because that's one thing in this world, you got to sort of figure out things these days where if people put up any type of investment or capital, you know, they're looking at how fast can I get it back. So Airbnb, as well as other things, it's just not Airbnb. There's very, you know, if you got something ready to go, it can, you know, turn around quick. So
third one stuff.
Okay, wait a minute, my board froze up. Okay. All right, so tomorrow, like I said, our tentative title for tomorrow is 300 Tents. And this can apply to anybody that will be listening. Because I think that's about the least expensive way to do things, and you can build up from there. That's if you want to really... super tight budget, man. I'm trying to find my way out of this for today. Okay, here we go.
So
in any event, go ahead, Reba.
Oh yeah, just wanted to say that I enjoyed the podcast, and I'm looking forward to bringing work to the table.
Now, what did you think about the way I measure wealth through natural resources?
I love that you call it Earth Wealth. That is awesome. Awesome. Because.
Yeah, that's what it is. Earth Wealth, yeah.
Yeah. I'm actually with my oldest son now. I just picked him up for his lunch break. And so he's grabbing stuff to eat in the restaurant. So we've talked about that. The thing is, I want to engage them. And they watch, like, you know, a lot of TikToks, and they're getting empowered with some information and any other. I don't want to say that they seem to be rejecting what I'm trying to share with our podcast. However, they're learning. They're learning, because everything doesn't just come from somebody who's ranting on Facebook and TikTok.
15-20 years ago, I wasn't having this conversation with nobody. You know, so
yeah. Well, you know, these young people are a little different,
right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because they're information ready, tech ready. So I just wanted you to share what Earth Wealth is. You know, my son just got back in the car, because they don't realize why I want to do some of these things and why I keep trying to get them to tune in. But my oldest son is he's here. He's just listening, and he needs to know what Earth Wealth is, because that's what we talked about.
All right. Well, let me explain it real quick. Let me get people's attention. Let's say a person wants to become a millionaire. Okay. The quickest way that I know that a person can be worth a million is to buy you at least 1 acre of land. Now, there are other ways to do it, but what I know is 1 acre of land. Now, 1 acre, now this is, we have to get to, this is simple. A third grader can pick this up. 1 acre equal 42,560 square feet. Once again, 1 acre equal 42,640 square feet. Now, a gallon, now how many gallons, because we're going towards Earth Wealth here. How many gallons of water, how many gallons of water are in 1 acre? All right, there are 326,000 gallons of water in one acre. So we take the figure of 326,000 gallons in 1 acre.
Brother LA, so he's on break and he's about to go back. But the definition of Earth Wealth, if you don't mind.
Oh, Earth Wealth is essentially anything. It can be groundwater, sunlight, wind, dead leaves, dead tree branches, anything that is of the earth and that is natural on the earth, that is Earth Wealth. All of those things that people take for granted, like groundwater, you can't see groundwater. But groundwater, I mean, you buy bottles, people buy bottles of water every day or every week. That water is worth something. Like where I'm at right now, I don't buy any water. I have my own private well where I can basically provide water to everybody that's on your block, with all the water that they would ever need, and I'm just on a quarter acre land where I'm at right now. That's Earth Wealth. You're walking on an ocean of water. But if you live in Chicago, the city of Chicago, they want to sell you municipal water. But why buy municipal water where you can have your own Earth Wealth? So Earth Wealth is what nature has already provided, but you just have to recognize it and tap in on it. It doesn't have to be oil, but I would say the most valuable resource of Earth Wealth would be water. But there are other things too, like dead leaves, tree branches, anything that hits the ground is Earth Wealth. Vegetation, Earth Wealth, is all worth money. You just have to learn how to convert it from one state to another state.
I'm listening.
And there are at least 10 forms of Earth Wealth probably in every square foot of land that you step on.
Okay.
So 1 acre of land can make you into a millionaire. Just 1 acre. That's the size of a football field.
Like those people that sell you bottled water, you know, Evian, Dasani, and all those people. That's earth wealth. They buy the land and then they pump the water out. That's all they're doing. You can do the same thing.
So yeah, my son was able to hear. And he's here. He's they're looking at like a lot of times what financial resources we have accessibility to. A lot of people don't know about that. So
Earth wealth is the number one resource for finances. But once again, you got to train your mind to, like I said, we take water for granted, you know, because, and we're so used to paying for it. But I'm probably not the only one on this call that has a well, but I don't pay for water. If I wanted to, I can bottle up my water and sell it. But the state again. Chris, you got 2 acres. Chris, you got a well on your land?
No, my land is in the city.
Okay. So they don't let you drill for water there?
No, you can't put geothermal in a city. You can't. You have to have you just because you put solar. Can do solar, but you will still be on the meter. You have to have a gas meter, and you have to have an electric meter. Okay. Even if you go the other route, you have to use those two, and they cost you per month to have them. So just to have a gas meter on your house costs you basically $20.
You know, tomorrow, in this to the 300 tents, we're going to have I just retitled it, Earth Wealth 300 tents. We're going to go in a detailed thing on what Earth Wealth is and how to, like, Reba, when I met you about 4 years ago, you know, we went from Chicago to where there was an abundance of Earth Wealth, where you can legally tap in on it. And that was Hopkins Park, Illinois, and Pembroke, Illinois. I flew all the way from Florida, one day up. I only was in Chicago a handful of hours. I met with Reba and Pleasant Stephens. We went, like I said, from Chicago to the country, as most people call it, to Hopkins Park and Pembroke. In those places, I can do things there that I can't do in Chicago or in a place wherever Chris was talking about. That's essential, earth wealth. If you can tap into earth wealth, then, you know, you get as well as you get. And you can exchange that earth wealth for whatever else you want.
We do have a well on the farm that's out in Ashland.
Okay.
And that land might be something for the immigration.
Okay. I would say people, here's part of people's research. Write down how much you spend on water a year. But I don't spend anything on water unless I'm in the airport or something like that. But here, I don't spend any money on water. So, all right, you know what, tomorrow, we'll cover 300 tents plus earth wealth, because a lot of people don't know what earth wealth is.